Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. By 2030, 81 million Americans will be 65 years or older. For decades, that scenario has been identified as a recipe for disaster. Who will support them? Who will walk the little old ladies across the busy intersections? The day of reckoning arrived in 2008 when the nation's first baby boomer started receiving Social Security benefits. But what if many, if not most baby boomers, continue working well into the traditional period of retirement? Then the equation changes. Chris Farrell, senior economics contributor at Marketplace, American Public Media's nationally syndicated public radio program, has written about that equation in human terms in his book, Unretirement, How Baby Boomers Are Changing the Way We Think About Work, Community, and the Good Life. He joins us now in the studio. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me.
So why all the doom and gloom in the first place? What have economists been missing over the years?
Well, I think what we've had a conversation about a trajectory that is a very simple trajectory. You have more and more older people. And at its core, the sense is you have too few young people supporting too many elders. And at the same time, then that means the economy is going to be weaker. The dynamism of the economy, the new normal, is going to be a slow growth economy. And then that means paying for Social Security and other old age programs gets a lot more expensive. And it's really easy to have this dark cloud come over the discussion. And if you look at a lot of Wall Street research, think tank research, they've been having this long-term forecast of a weak economy with the aging of the population.
And the fact is the population is not just aging. The problem is it's aging, and there are many fewer people left to foot the bill has been the problem.
That's right. So what we have is we're living longer. And sort of, you know, rounding off the numbers, because always with the average life expectancy, they always say, 62.3. Well, let's just – we'll round off the numbers. When – President Roosevelt signed the Social Security Act in 1935. Average life expectancy was 62 years. Average life expectancy is now about 79 years. And so we have more older people because of the aging of the baby boom population, that 76, 77 million born between 1946, 1964, plus we're living longer. And what I have found in having conversations a lot of times with people about the aging of the population, they go from 60 to 90 really fast. It's as if 60 to 90 is 1 year. And yet if you think back on your life, if you're 60 years old and you think back 30 years ago, how much has changed during that period of time? How much has happened? And so I think there's a growing realization. You have to slow down a little bit. And there are changes in our society. There are changes in our economy that are going to turn an aging population into more of an asset than a liability.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the possibility for individuals and society when it comes to the aging baby boomer population. My guest is Chris Farrell. He is an economist, a contributor to American Public Media's Marketplace, and author of a book. It's called Unretirement, How Baby Boomers Are Changing the Way We Think About Work, Community, and the Good Life. Listeners, I'd love to hear from listeners who feel like they've not retired but unretired, that they've moved on to another path or another stage, but it doesn't necessarily have to do with reclining in any way or isolating themselves. It has to do maybe with getting out more than ever. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also check out our Facebook page and post a question or a comment there. Chris Farrell, where did the familiar concept of retirement come from? You said that the transition to mass retirement might not have happened, or at least would have been delayed even more if it weren't for the Great Depression.
Right. Because if you think about throughout history, let's just concentrate on U.S. history, what most people – the concept of retirement didn't exist except for the wealthy, because what most people did is they worked until they died. that's the sort of story of much of our history. Then you had the Great Depression, and Franklin Roosevelt signed the Social Security Act in 1935. And then you had Medicare in 1965. A lot of big companies had those traditional defined benefit pension plans, the one that pay you an income later on in your life just based on some sort of earnings and years of work formula. And most importantly, we had this incredible, the golden age of economic growth in the 50s, in the 60s, in the early 70s. And so for the first time in history, a large part of our society could embrace leisure, could not work, and could have a good time. And they could take the RVs and they could go on tours around the country and they could take trips to Europe and go to museums. And this had only been available to the wealthy. But a couple things have happened along the way, which is one of the big things is we are living longer. And we're living not only longer, but we're better educated and we're healthier than previous generations. We have fewer disabilities. And so what we're learning is that for more and more people, the notion that with all the ups and downs in a career, all the ups and downs in the job market, that you reach the age 60, 62, and you are now going to say goodbye to all that skill, all that experience, all that knowledge. You're going to say goodbye to that forever. Just walk out the door and that's it. And you're just going to do leisure for the rest of your life. And what it turns out is for a majority of people, that is not attractive. They don't want to work 40, 50 hours a week. They want to be working flexible, part-time. There's a whole experiment about what does this really mean to be working longer. But then, it's just that they want to, you know, if you think about most people, we want to be useful. We want to be helpful. And one way to be useful, one way to be helpful is in the work environment.
You know, you say the first time in history that we've had that there was this retirement class that wasn't limited to the very wealthy or the wealthy. How did we then become so quickly entrenched in the idea of it? How did that happen?
You know, it's really a fascinating story. So the only theory that I have is that there was a lot of money to be made off of retirement, off of the early years of Social Security dollars and the early years of the defined benefit pension plan. Because if you think about it, the real estate development industry embraced this. The financial services industry embraced it. The life insurance industry embraced it. And even to this day, if you look at a magazine or, you know, you're going through a newspaper or you're listening to an advertisement on radio, you know, this still, when people want to say retirement, it's the golf course. I mean, that is still a dominant image. But a lot of it, I think, had to do was it was a true triumph of marketing and a lot of money being put toward, here's a vision, because the developers, the financial services industry, they made a lot of money off of it.
Well, there's sun cities all over the place now. I guess they have to be in sunny climates would be the only requirement. What happens to that industry? What happens to all of that when – If the unretirement age comes to fruition as you've predicted?
So part of, you know, one half the answer is a little bit facetious, which is never underestimate the ability of developers to pick your pocket. And so what developers are doing, if you talk, they're actually very sophisticated and they're building multi-generational communities. They're building communities based on the notion that a lot of aging boomers are going to want to continue to work, to be doing part-time activities. And when I was out in Vareda, which is a multi-generational community being built on the outskirts of Phoenix, and it's sort of like the anti-Sun City because it has a school. The whole thing about Sun City is there's no school, there's
no kids,
there's no taxes. This is a multi-generation community, but about a third of the residents at the time when I was out there were 55 plus. So this is what they're doing. This is a way that they're adjusting to this. But still even there, that is a wonderful story. It's always stuck with me. So this guy, and he'd retired. And he said, Chris, here's the thing. You know, you retire and you have a drink at 4:30 in the afternoon. And it's wonderful. You're not worried about a meeting. You're not worried about getting fired. You're not worried about someone yelling at you. It's really relaxing. He says, then you have a drink 3:30 in the afternoon and it feels a little strange. And then you have a drink at 1:30 in the afternoon and you realize it's time to go back to work. And what a lot of the actual economic research shows is that a lot of people, when they retire, really only retire for about a year or two. And then they come back into the workforce, not necessarily to the same job, not necessarily to some high-powered thing where you're on the road or where your body is getting beaten down. But they come back in the workplace, and I think a lot of it has to do with two things. One, as I mentioned earlier, your skills. Mm-hmm. You're not, exercising them, being helpful, using these things to help people out. The other thing is that work is a social institution. You know, if someone has a baby, we celebrate it. Someone's getting a divorce, we help them get through the divorce. There are people we don't like, we gossip. I mean, it's a social institution. And the surveys that show that ask people who are retired, what do you most miss about your pre-retirement life? Top every single time is colleagues, suppliers, vendors, the people. Money's on there. It's actually pretty far down the list. So I think this social aspect of work is extremely important.
And so I wanted to talk about the idea of the longer life expectancy, because you said we have a tendency to jump from 60 to 90 really quickly. And it did become something to fear, but along with the longer years, we also have healthier lifestyles. But along with the longer years, we also have a much higher incident of cancer, dementia, Alzheimer's disease, you name it. I mean, there's a lot of other things that go along with that.
There are. And so, this is not a Pollyannish point of view that says, look, we have, for example, we have a broken down, terrible, failing long-term care system. The insurance market has shrunk enormously. There's actually not a lot of insurers anymore writing long-term care insurance policies. We are really, by the way, anyone who ever says the family's breaking down, take a look at how many families and how much effort is going on to be taking care of aging parents. And when you put that into dollars in terms of time, it's much more than we pay on Medicare, for example, on an annual basis. Mm-hmm. So yes, these things happen, but what's happening is they're being pushed out. You're able to work longer and you are able to work healthier and, part-time, flexible work. So it, for me, it's not that you're eliminating a lot of these issues, but what you are doing is saying that as we have an aging population, it is the 65-year-old is like the 55-year-old of 20 or 30 years ago. And so it means that people can continue to make wealth. They can continue to pay taxes. They can continue to contribute to the economy. So whenever someone says to you, oh, there's all these old people coming along and it's going to weigh down the economy we don't have enough young people, you say, but here's the thing. They're educated. They're healthier. They're able to work. They're going to continue to contribute. So the burden, the quote unquote burden of these elders is really not going to be that much different from today.
You also mentioned the work ethic is certainly not unique to that generation, right, but it is very, very strong.
Very strong. And
what do we know about that?
It's a big part of the discussions going on. I noticed that in the fast food industry, for example, and the fast food industry has largely been a young person's game and for good reasons. But there's increasing appreciation in the fast food industry, certain parts of the retail industry, and it has to do with reliability, willingness to talk to the customer, exchange in a conversation. Fast food industry has found that, no, they don't move around as fast, but they also don't fall as much. And so you don't have as many workman compensation claims. And, when you start looking at it, a lot of it really has to do with how do you organize your workplace. And the easy thing to do is say, they can't move around too fast. Well, okay. But if you reorganize your workplace, maybe they don't have to move around as fast. Plus they don't fall as often and they do show up more. And I think the showing up more, when you watch a young person getting their first job or two, you realize, getting fired, it's actually not a bad thing because that's how you learn that you're supposed to show up. That's how you learn you're supposed to behave a certain way. And it's a real shock to the system. I got fired. Well, if you're older, you've been fired along the way or you've been laid off. And so you realize what it takes to accomplish your tasks, what it is you're supposed to be doing. And then there's signs that you have greater empathy, in terms of talking to people. So, there's something you do learn some things over a lifetime, most of us, and it translates into a good employee.
We're talking about what to do instead of retiring. The name of the book is called Unretirement: How Baby Boomers Are Changing the Way We Think About Work, Community, and the Good Life. The author, Chris Farrell, is in the studio with me today. If you have a story about how you've avoided retirement, By hook or by crook, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. By 2030, 15 years from now, some 81 million Americans will be aged 65 and older. Just Americans. They will be in the healthiest and best educated senior population in history. And although it has been predicted that they will also bankrupt the rest of the country, they also could save the country. We're talking about the concept of unretirement, a term coined by Chris Farrell, senior economics contributor at Public Radio's Marketplace. The title of his latest book is Unretirement: How Baby Boomers Are Changing the Way We Think About Work, Community, and the Good Life. He's with me here in the studio. We'd love to hear your stories about what you've done after the first stage of your life, the working part of your life, I guess, what you're doing differently, and how you've reached unretirement. 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. There still is, you said some industries are recognizing the value of older workers, but there's still a big problem with ageism, discrimination against older people.
Oh, age discrimination is huge, and it's just out there, and it's extremely real. And I think that's going to change over time. I mean, part of more and more people wanting to work, confronting age discrimination, the reality of age discrimination. So the analogy that I would draw is that we're kind of back where the women's movement was back in the 1980s.
Yeah.
And 2015 is not 1985. A lot of progress, a lot has changed, and a lot more progress needs to be made. So it'll be a combination of the law, a combination of changing norms, changing beliefs, changing expectations. But and one thing, just as a practical matter, I think one of the things that that's why a lot of people start their own company, go off and be a consultant, start their own company, do something very different, because oftentimes you're working through your network, because your network doesn't. And by the way, your network is your most valuable asset as an aging worker. The people that have known you over time, those third degree of separations, not just family and friends, because they know you. You're not an age. You're a person. And that, so your network, when you're looking for what am I going to do next? What could I be doing? Is there some sort of work I can do that would give me some meaning and a paycheck? Tap into your network. Talk to your people. Go out there, because age discrimination is not an issue with them like it can be if you're trying to go through the human resources department. I mean, they're not going to say it that way, but that's the reality. And what your network is saying, you're really good at this, and I know somebody over here.
You mentioned women in the 80s. You quote an economist at the Urban Institute as saying that older workers are to the first half of the 21st century what women were to the last half of the 20th century. Do you mean just in terms of the discrimination issue, or in terms of the productivity they bring to the table?
More the productivity they bring to the table. If you look at the economy, there's a calculation from McKinsey, and it goes from 1970 to 2009. And looking at the contribution that women coming into the workforce made, and the economy is 25% larger because of women coming into the workforce over that period of time. And I think it's the exact same thing with people working longer. And it's going to be starting up their own business, part-time work, temp work, contract work, continuing to work full-time, all kinds of stuff. But it adds to our wealth. It adds to corporate profit. It adds to our income, what we pay in taxes and the revenues that go to the government. So it's really a gain to the pie just simply gets bigger.
Deborah and Bexley, you're on the air. Hi, Deborah.
Hi, I'm one of the people you're talking about. I retired from teaching at age 61, and I lasted until October and had to have something to do. So I took a 200-hour training course for teaching yoga, and now I'm taking a 300-hour training course for therapeutic yoga. And I have met a whole new bunch of people of different ages, not just old people. I have a new community. I'm much healthier than I was before, and I'm very happy about it. My husband, when he retired, started working on old British cars and now has a company where he does parts and fixes parts of old British cars. I have a neighbor who's a retired teacher, and she works in retail very part-time whenever she wants to, and they love her because she was a teacher and she knows how to talk to people. So it's a wonderful thing not to have to get up at 6:30 in the morning, but to still have something to look forward to do and something new to learn.
I bet you teachers, Chris Farrell, are very good at this.
Extremely. I mean, I can't prove this, but in my reporting, I would say teachers and nurses as a group is in the vanguard of this whole, what's next, second career, unretirement. And part of it has to do with that they're educated, they're engaged. Oftentimes, teachers or nurses can kind of burn out on what they're doing. Mm-hmm. I love what they're doing, but, kind of burn out. But they're educated and they have energy and they've been in a situation of, using their brains and they want to keep doing it.
Deborah, tell us what your process was for coming, by the time October rolled around, you still didn't miss the kids, but what? How did you come to that?
Well, it was very sudden. I saw that they were doing that. I actually signed up for the course the day before it started. And I thought, well, if nothing else, I'll just learn how to do yoga better myself and I'll learn more about it. But then when I met a whole new community of people and realized how important this was, especially for aging people. There were at least three other people in my class who were over 50, and we all realized, that everybody needs this, and so it was a wonderful community. If I could say one more thing, my husband and I travel a lot, and now we can travel on off-peak times because, we can go when kids are in school, mm-hmm. and we see people our age who are traveling, and I'm worried that now that a lot of the retirement plans are ending and people are having to work for lower wages and, what is going to happen in 20 years when they retire and they can't retire? They have to keep going. Who's going to support the tourist industry and who's going to support all the people who depend on people who have an income when they're retired and go out and do things?
Well, that's kind of what I was getting at with the whole Sun City routine. Deborah, Chris Farrell?
Yeah. Yes, I mean, I think that it's a good point. To some extent, I think we're going to change the way we spend our dollars. So, and Deborah, this isn't under the category I'm making this up, but it is a forecast because I think what this trend really does is it means people are going to stay in their community more. Some people are still going to leave and go to Arizona or go to Florida, leave. But more and more people are going to think about staying where they are because the network, the communities, these are really important. And these really help that as you do one thing and maybe you do another thing, it's just so much easier as opposed to picking up. And then if you pick up, you don't really know anybody and they don't know you. And yes, you may be able to get a job, but it's just a lot harder. So I actually think a lot of the money is going to end up being spent within the communities as people age in place. And there are all kinds of nonprofits being formed and for-profits being formed to kind of cater to an aging population that wants to continue to work, but not full-time.
And Deborah, thank you so much for your call. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. She also brought up the issue that this is yoga. It's really good for aging people. I imagine they could be helping each other, servicing each other, creating and knowing what their needs are and meeting those needs.
That's right. This is an incredible entrepreneurial area of the economy.
Yeah.
And I think it's really underestimated how much entrepreneurship is going on as people try to think about what I can be doing next. And the other thing is, there's always this question. So is it healthier people who are working longer,
yeah,
or is working longer keeping you healthy?
Right.
And this is the sort of thing the statisticians, scholars really try and tease out. And the evidence is pretty convincing that it's also working longer, helps you stay healthier. And it makes a lot of sense because you get up, you go someplace, you're using your mind, you're using your hands, you're using your body. And so staying engaged in the workplace is good for your health, which is not a bad thing to have.
I've interviewed the authors of that book, Younger Next Year, mm-hmm. where they tell me that I actually know I need to be working out 5 days a week instead of 3 days a week.
That's still on my list.
A little depressing. But it's kind of along those lines.
It's along those lines.
You're not supposed to be slowing down as you get older, necessarily.
No, and but you know,
if you don't have to.
If you have, and you probably have seen the ads for the computer games that are going to keep your mind as fight aging, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, all you have to do is, you know, go to the office if you're in a white-collar office, you know, the medical diagnostics clinic at a community clinic. They're changing the computer program every couple of months. They're updating the computer program. You have to change what you're doing. They're changing their procedures. And if you think about it, it's annoying. It's really annoying. But at the same time, you're learning. You're using your brain. We don't stop learning until we stop. And so I think that's a big part of what at work does is it says you have to learn that computer program, whether or not you want to.
And if all these older people stay in the job market to one degree or another, don't they take jobs from younger people? That's what somebody asked me.
Yes, and that's one of the big questions that comes all the time. And
when are they going to get out of the way?
When are they going to get out of the
way? There's a lot of people, you know, plugging up a lot of jobs right now.
So there's a couple of answers. I mean, the economists call this the lump of labor theory.
Okay.
Nice. And the lump of labor, and it's a fallacy. And it can be very true for a short period of time when you're having a downturn in the economy. It can be very true if you're in a company. Let's say you're in a company that's stagnant or declining. What you'll see is that the older workers hold on to the job and the younger workers who can get another job, they're out of there as fast as possible. But when you look at the overall economy and you look over the business cycle, what all the data points is the exact same direction. When older workers are getting jobs, younger workers are getting jobs. And then when older workers are getting jobs, younger workers are also getting better pay. And so, and when the economy is down, so we're in this boat together as opposed to one benefiting and the other hurting. And the real analogy that I think is a very powerful analogy, again, is the women's movement. And I went back and you look in the early 1980s, there are all these op-ed pages about, well, if more and more women are coming into the workforce, they're going to be careers, that means less jobs for men.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened is the pie simply got bigger. And that's what we should be thinking about. The pie is going to get bigger and we're in it together. And my final point would be, it also is an image that everyone's going to stay doing the exact same thing that they've been doing for the past 30 years, and they're not going to leave. So there's not going to be an opportunity for that young person. Well, I can tell you, for most people who are tired of doing more with less, no. They, you know, now that the unemployment rate's coming down, they're going to be out of there. So it's not that they're going to stay in that job. They're going to continue to work. But my suspicion is for most people, they're going to find something else to do because it's energizing, it's a little more fun, have a little more flexibility. So there's going to be enough churn in this economy that it's not a zero-sum game.
A lot of people are afraid to try something new. And I think they look at the – particularly millennials who they're saying are going to have – a dozen jobs or something unreal to a lot of people, a dozen careers, not just jobs. They won't be in journalism like I have for 36 years. They'll be doing something different all the time. And that's hard for people to grasp sometimes. But you refer to the encore jobs.
Yes. So encore jobs, there's sort of two meanings to the encore job. So there's an organization called Encore.org, headed up by Mark Friedman, wonderful organization. And what they've really been passionately pushing is you've been doing your job. You've been doing a good job. You're in the private sector. You're at midlife. And now take your skills and move to the nonprofit sector and attack some of society's biggest problems. So you were in finance at a company. Move and, you know, do your finance in the nonprofit sector. Encore can also simply mean, hey, I've been doing public relations all this period of time. Now it's time for me to do something else, to pursue some other kind of career. But this is part of the discussion that's happening nationally, and it's going on, and I think it's really important.
Because there's this strong streak of altruism as well in the baby boomer population.
Extremely strong. And, you know, one of the things that struck me in my interviews, and see what you think of this. So, you know, I'm at the age where a lot of young college graduates will come to me and, you know, they'll ask for career advice. How do you find a job? How do you even come to what? How do you even figure out what you want as a career? Of course, you have to tell them the truth. Well, you know what? It's happenstance for most people. And but it's really, you know, they want to earn an income. They don't want to be living in their parents' basement, but they really want to be doing something that they feel good about. And we applaud that. I think it's important that they pursue something that they believe in. When you talk to a 60-something, it's the exact same conversation. They want to earn an income, but they want to do something that they're making a difference, that provides meaning. They just don't want to earn an income to pay the mortgage, and that's important to do, but they want something more. And the only difference between the 60-something and the 20-something, 60-something knows time is short, and to the 20-something, it's infinity.
You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher. My guest is Chris Farrell. The name of his book is Unretirement, How Baby Boomers Are Changing the Way We Think About Work, Community, and the Good Life. He'll be at Half Price Books on West Lane Avenue at 2 p.m. this afternoon for a book signing, if you want to check that out. If you'd like to join the conversation, we'd love to hear from people about how they've reinvented the next stage in their life. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also check out our Facebook page, post your question or comment there. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Back in the day, we thought graduate from high school, then college or some skilled training program, then a job, then retire, then do what you really want. That scenario might have played out for many in the last generation. For baby boomers, maybe not so much. By choice or by necessity, maybe many in the baby boomer generation are finding an alternative. Still with us is Chris Farrell. He's senior economics contributor at Public Radio's Marketplace and author of Unretirement, How Baby Boomers Are Changing the Way We Think About Work, Community, and the Good Life. Give us a call if you have an idea about unretirement, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. I guess we've kind of already talked about it, but how the concept of the good life is changing. And we already have, I guess, kind of talked about what it means to the golf course industry. but I hate to see them turn all those golf courses into something, I don't know, what?
Yeah, I'm not sure. Maybe they'll become playgrounds for the young and the old.
What about buy-in from the younger generation, though? Do baby boomers need their cooperation in this experiment?
You know, I think the real beneficiary of this experiment is the younger generation. So right now, for a lot of boomers, this is an experiment. You know, Joseph Coughlin calls it, he's the head of the MIT Age Lab. He calls it the Baby Boomer Retirement Improv Act. And the thing about experimentation or improv is some things don't work out well at all. And there's also just, you know, there are a lot of people who worked in low-income jobs all their lives. You know, they never had a retirement savings plan at work. They never had an employer-sponsored health insurance plan. You know, and, you know, the notion of working longer is also, you know, what are you talking about? You know, working longer here. But the wealth that's being created and the experimentation that's going on, what that is doing for the younger generation, by the time my 23-year-old is 50, he's going to have a very different image of what the last half of life is all about and what are the expectations. And I expect we'll see changes in our retirement savings system. I hope we'll see changes in our retirement savings system. We better see changes in our retirement savings system. So, but I think it's really going to change the younger generation and the part that excites me is, does it change the way a younger generation thinks about jobs and careers over a lifetime?
Let's hear from one of those people. Tommy in Columbus, you're on the air. You're 30 years old.
I am 30, and thanks for having me, first of all. A lot of aspects you've discussed from the millennials, which I'm not quite a millennial being 30, but I've had well
close
over
enough
a
for me, Tommy.
Jobs.
Go ahead.
Thanks. Well, I've had well over a dozen jobs. A couple of those I would say qualify as careers at this point. But it has still been about the satisfaction of the work, about a tangible result, you know, personally, more than a paycheck. I have a lot of friends who already have contributed quite a bit to their own retirement with college degrees and, you know, grown-up careers, as I like to call them. But I'm kind of in between. I'm starting to worry about my retirement because I'm hearing about the Social Security system kind of going to be turned around backwards on itself. And I'm starting to feel the pressure of finding a job just for the sake of working versus something that is really satisfying. And it's even harder to do when the job field, you know, the job openings aren't as diverse as I would desire them to be, I suppose.
But do you plan on working in beyond this traditional retirement age that we're talking about, or what are your expectations?
I would plan on that. I do plan on that. If not strictly from a financial aspect, just of having something I enjoy doing with my life, getting up and, you know, not just sitting around the house every day, like I've seen some retirees do that I've known.
Yeah, so you know, part of it is in thinking about it. I think what's really important, and you're probably doing this, and it's so easy to say, it's less about retirement savings and it's more about having savings. And for tax reasons, there'd be good reasons to put money into a an IRA or some sort of retirement savings plan, and it's harder to get to. But as you're thinking forward and you're thinking about, I want to have jobs or careers that, you know, maybe I'm going to take less income, but I'm more satisfied with what I'm doing. You want to have savings as a hedge against losing your job, or as a way of saying, you know what, I'm done with this job. It's now time for me to go over here. Because so much of our conversation about aging and jobs and careers is tied to a major transition called retirement. Right. It's what, if you think for the past three decades, that has been the conversation, saving for retirement, saving for this big transition. But if you think about most people, they have multiple transitions throughout a lifetime, even if they're not planning on it, because you get laid off, because you get divorced, because you get married, because you have a kid. There's all kinds of transitions that happen. So I've kind of have this almost like fundamental perspective or fundamentalist perspective, is that what really matters is that you're saving. And there's smart tax reasons to save in a retirement savings plan. But the real key is that you're saving, because you're going to – savings protects you against – multiple transitions, and it also savings provides you the opportunity to take advantage of transitions.
I guess I was kind of thinking of the word flexibility.
Right. Yes.
We feel so and I think Tommy's saying he doesn't feel that quite yet. He feels like he can move on and move around, but he's starting to worry.
Starting to worry. Yeah.
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 Not quite. Tommy, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Let's talk about finances and Social Security,
yes.
the thing that we haven't yet, really. And you say you have to look at the model and ask, why do we have it that way? Let's talk about Social Security, because that's a construct that at this point we can't escape.
No. So here, I think this is the safest forecast. And forecasting is hazardous to your wealth, I know. But the safest forecast anyone can make. Social Security, if you're a 30-year-old, you're a 20-year-old, you're 40 years old, Social Security is going to be there when you retire. That is a safe forecast, because Social Security at this point in time is the universal retirement system in the United States, and it is not going to be taken away. The only thing you can say is that in 2033, we have a system where you're only going to be able to pay out 75% of the promised benefits. Now, we're not going to get there. just going to have to get a little closer to the crisis point in order to get our system to concentrate. But Social Security is going to be there when people retire. So that's from a system point of view. From the individual point of view, I think we need to change the way we talk about Social Security, because we all do this, where we talk about, hey, you know, you can file for Social Security at age 62. And then you can file as late as 70. And I think what we need to change the conversation is saying you should file for Social Security at age 70. And then if for health reasons or for job reasons or, you know, variety of other reasons, you can file all the way down to age 62. And the reason is the benefit from age 62 to age 70 for the typical worker is 75% higher.
I've talked about Social Security on the program before, and one thing I've learned is it's very complicated.
It's extremely complicated.
Know your Social Security benefits.
You know, Lawrence Kotlikoff has just written a book on, you know, for individuals with two other co-authors on how to take advantage of your Social Security
plan.
I've
interviewed him.
Right. And, you know, they really know what they're talking about. Now, my reaction to that was, this is really wrong. It should not be this complicated.
True.
It should not be this hard. So, yes, but you're absolutely right. Know your Social Security. And there's been a real change in the financial planning industry, because the financial planning industry, you know, back in the 80s and 90s would say, oh, just file for Social Security age 62. Yeah, it's just not that much money. And, of course, now they've really realized they've changed. First of all, for most people, it is a lot of money. And secondly, it is an inflation-hedged annuity that you cannot outlive. Is extremely important. What most people have a hard time with Social Security, because there's nothing that I say that I get more angry emails about than on Social Security that you should wait till age 70, is what risk do you want to take? So the risk that bothers a lot of people is, if I don't file at 62 and I die at 63, I never took advantage of that program. And they're right. You're absolutely right.
But you're dead.
The bigger risk to me is that you live for a long period of time and you don't want to outlive your assets. So that's the part of the value of waiting on Social Security.
Meaning that your other assets can fade, they can decline, but Social Security, when you hit 70, you'll have 75% more than you would have.
And a lot of your other assets, like your bonds and everything, bonds or stocks, if you have them, or cash, you know, inflation eats away at them over time.
All right, retirement savings. You say don't want to really think of it as retirement savings, just call it savings. But they're far from what they should be for the typical baby boomer at this point.
They absolutely are. And so that's one of the reasons people are going to be working longer. I mean, there's sort of a spectrum here. Mm-hmm. So there's one group of people going to be working longer because they have to. They didn't save. Now, I frankly think most people have not saved because they couldn't resist the mall or they had to get that really expensive car. If you look at it, a lot has to do with paying for their kids' education, mm-hmm. providing them with a good education, all types of reasons. But for whatever reason, they don't have a lot of savings. And 42% of private sector workers do not have access to an employer-sponsored retirement savings plan at work. And yes, you can go set up your own IRA, but that's hard to do. And if you look at who sets them up, it's usually people who have a lot of money. So, yes, there's a group of people who have to work because they need the income. There's another group of people, the other end of the spectrum, who don't need the income, but work is such a big part of who they are that, you know, the notion of retirement is an anathema. They're not going to retire. And then there's a vast group of people in the middle that it's a combination of the two. It's going to make their lives a lot easier and if they continue to earn an income. But they also kind of want to stay engaged. And it's a way of staying engaged. It's a way of having a community. There's some psychic returns to staying in the workplace or starting your own business, which a lot of people are doing. I mean, 25% of all new businesses in 2014 were started by the 55 to 64-year age group. So it can also be starting your own business. But again, it is that mix of need and want for most people.
What about poor people, people who grew up poor? We have an email from a listener who writes, before messing with the age of getting Social Security, we must consider the people who are worn out by 35 years at low-paid work, doing physically and emotionally draining work. There's no golden parachute as the cook at a local chain restaurant.
Absolutely right. And that's why I'm completely against raising the age on Social Security.
Okay.
I think that is a big mistake.
You're telling people this is a choice they need to make if it works for them, not
right. Exactly.
Force everybody.
The changes that I would argue with for Social Security, that'd be another long show, is to change the incentives to encourage people to continue to work. So one that's out there by John Chauvin, he's an economist at Stanford University. He said, okay, so you've worked for 40 years. At that point, you're paid up in the system. So you no longer pay into Social Security, and your employer no longer pays in Social Security. So that's a bump up in your take-home pay, and you're a little bit cheaper to your employer.
This is a proposal. It's not the reality.
It's not the reality.
Wait a minute.
It would be great if it was. There are lots of ideas like that that are out there that are really attractive, and that's the approach that we've taken. But this notion that we should raise the age of Social Security, I think, is really wrong, because most of the people who are living longer – most everybody's living longer, but where the real gains are higher educated, higher income, higher skilled sections of the population. But the thing that I think is really important is this working longer provides the wherewithal that makes it easier to improve Social Security, to shore up Social Security, to make Social Security a better retirement savings plan. So I don't think working longer for a majority of boomers, and then those who can't work longer, I don't think they're in opposition. I actually think that they can work together to improve the retirement savings system.
The Affordable Care Act is in place now, but it's very recent. We still have a large portion of baby boomers who grew up in a system where they might have been inadequately insured. They haven't been able to take care of themselves the way they should have. There are going to be problems down the road.
There are absolutely going to be problems down the road. And we have, you know, it looks like the trend is turning, but we've had a real, you know, there's been a real increase in obesity. Some of the recent trends look like that may be leveling out at this point, but you don't want to get, you know, you still have to be concerned about that. You're absolutely right. And, you know, you mentioned the Affordable Care Act, and this is on the level of this should lead to an improvement. Mm-hmm. Because one of the things, when you lost your job at age 55, pre-Affordable Care Act, yes, you could try to go to a trade group. You could go maybe buy a health savings account. But basically, the individual health insurance market in the United States was really bad. And where the good health plans were the employer-sponsored. What the Affordable Care Act now has the promise of creating a vibrant or individual health insurance market with some choice in there. And so I think this is going to encourage people to be able to work longer, particularly that group of people, you know, you lose your job around 60, 62, you know, that's a difficult period to lose your job. Do you file for Social Security? You know, all those kinds of questions. And I think that an individual health insurance market is going to really help people be willing to continue to work and look for work or deal with losing their job.
In your in writing and researching for Unretirement, you met a lot of people across the country who are thinking exactly the same way you are. This is happening at the local level all over the place, including in Columbus.
It is.
Including at WOSU, for that matter.
I mean, it's actually – this is not a conversation that's going on in Washington, D.C., at least as far as the Capitol goes, mm-hmm. right, the lawmakers. And it's not going on the state level among lawmakers very much. But you go to Columbus or you go to New York City or in Twin Cities or organizations like SHIFT, which is a nonprofit that's been created to help people come together and try and find jobs. I mean, this is really a grassroots movement. It's a grassroots conversation. And it's very exciting, all the entrepreneurship that's going on with nonprofits and for-profits and temp agencies and contract agencies. And everyone's kind of trying to figure out the space. The financial planning industry is trying to figure out, okay, so how do we incorporate this into our advice that's happening? But so what's really – and I think part of it and what is important about this conversation is that when people come to one of these organizations, they realize they're not alone. They're asking – lots of other people are asking the same questions. A lot of other people are dealing with age discrimination. A lot of other people are kind of wondering, well, is there something out there for me to do? I want to continue to earn something of an income. And it's all happening on the grassroots level, which is exciting. And hopefully what that means is eventually the legislators will pay attention.
Well, they tend to be a lot of very smart people who are pretty plugged in and know how things work too.
Yes. And so this is part of the, you know, we're at the early stages of this. So it's being driven by people who, you know, kind of want to make it happen. I can't call them revolutionaries because it's not quite the vanguard, but it's pretty close to the vanguard. And one of the things that I found interesting is this is the first generation of career women who are retiring. So, I mean, women have always had jobs, women have always retired, but this is the first generation of going to college, having a career, and a career being a defining aspect of your life, who are now facing retirement. When you look at the unretirement movement, those women are in the vanguard. They're in the lead. They're starting a lot of these nonprofits. They're doing a lot of the organizational work. It's a really interesting sort of social aspect of the movement that's going on right now.
Well, Chris Farrell, thank you so much for joining us today to talk about it. I've enjoyed it.
Thank you.
Chris Farrell, he is the author of the book Unretirement, How Baby Boomers Are Changing the Way We Think About Work, Community, and the Good Life. He'll be at Half Price Books on West Lane Avenue at 2 p.m. today for a book signing. You can check that out. Thanks to the AllSides staff, producer Michael DeBonis, associate producer Amy Jurovich, AllSides interns Shahina Sagiri, Ryan McFadden, Sam Buck, and Matt Berkeley. Alan DeCenzo is the composer of our theme music. Thanks a lot for listening. This is AllSides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.